The contents of this podcast might refer to information that has changed since the moment of its recording. Follow us on Twitter at Project Noom to keep up with our latest updates.
So we're going to hop in and get started. A shout out to Ready Player One. Happy to see you down there. And then also Carpool. I see you down there as well. And Holy Macaroni. So nice to see everybody here. Pete, you want to kick us off tonight?
I don't know where to kick off. I don't want. You know, I haven't really had a big update from Project Noom for quite a while now. I've been following along and listening in and buying into some of these NFTs and helping some of these music artists. And there's a couple that I've really enjoyed, like I don't know his actual name, but Odd Shaped Shadow. I've been following along his lo-fi and chill relaxing songs, and I think I've got every last one of his drops.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, managed to collect them all and get them into my wallet, and got copies of it on my zip drive, so I can actually play it on my little retro USB device, which is in the other bedroom. So it's the only way at the moment that I can play, some of this stuff that I'm collecting as NFTs. So I've got to get up back on the old USB and plug it in.
Do you feel like you've gone back to 2000?
Yeah.
The year 2000?
Yeah, a little bit. It's a little hard because I can't just scroll and pick what I want. I'd have to skip.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. Let's do an update then. So I think where we last left off, and when you were talking, so we had basically done the proof of concept, if I will, basically. To where, for everybody, if you're wondering what the heck was the proof of concept, the drops of the fractionalized IP for streaming royalties and distribution. So that was the quote, really proof of concept for us. And that started with MERS. And we've gone down the list of other Cardano artists because we wanted to support them, to utilize them to create. The tech has stayed the same. We've worked on the back end of streamlining some things for the distribution side. But the biggest thing that we've got to learn from these drops for the stream tokens anyways is that it was just different business logic. So what price points were working for people? What's the quote perceived value? What's a threshold of what are people willing to pay versus what they perceive the value to be of these things. And that was very, for me, that was extremely just kind of not necessarily enlightening, but it was definitely educational because, I think we have an opinion. Everybody has opinions on the value of something. And I think that basically, we always left it up to the artist to set the pricing and the bundle amounts. But I think in general, the community as a whole, they understood the concept of, okay, I'm supporting this artist in a more profound way than just buying a copy of their album. But I still think we have a lot of work to do from an educational standpoint of going, hey, this is really valuable. Why is this really valuable? Where is this leading? And really helping people understand, okay, I am literally buying something, an NFT that's going to sit in my wallet, and it's directly tied to income being generated via people consuming this piece of audio. And so understanding that this actually, it's not a living NFT, but it is an NFT it's going to be deriving value, not just you buy it and you hope it goes up in some type of intrinsic value, right? So that to me was a big learning curve, just from hearing people's just comments or feedback and going, okay, what is this really? So that to me was a big kind of aha. So
I think you might want to actually explain that as well for anyone that's new to the project and listening in for the first time. Like, how does that the royalties get paid out for holding these particular, the MERS tokens and whatnot, through the platform? How does that actually work?
Yeah. So essentially, what actually happens, and since, and everybody, I want to point out that if you're listening, what we did is we took the IP rights directly related to streaming royalties, and we fractionalized them into 100 million pieces, and they're tokenized in fundables. And the artists, they sold them in bundles. And so they basically, what it amounts to is it represented the percentage of the ownership of the streaming royalty income that was generated by the piece of audio that the artist distributed through Noom. And so that's actually, I used a couple big words, but distribution is a product in and of itself, right? So musicians, and the current, I know, Pete, you're laughing at me. But truly, in the current world, if I'm a musician and I want to get my music out in front of people and I want it to land on traditional platforms, I have to distribute the music. That is that's the industry term. And so that means if I'm with a label, they take care of that for me. But if I'm not, I have to deal with it. And what does that mean? I have to deal with the distribution service. So like a CD Baby, a DistroKid. There's a couple of other ones as well. But that's essentially a service that musicians pay, an annual subscription for that service. And as it currently stands, there's actually a couple of them that if you don't pay every year, your song goes away, and they also happen to take 5% ownership of the streaming royalty IP for the privilege of distributing your music out there. And so that's actually what we've been doing is we've been doing twofold. We've been distributing web to web two, and we're also fractionalizing the ownership into web three. So back to your original question of how does it work? Basically, we have a white label solution that connects us to the traditional system. And what happens is that every piece of music that's played, that's distributed through Noom and that's played in the traditional system, that is connected back to Noom. And at that point, whenever the payouts go, they come into Noom, we take a snapshot, and then those payments, it's mapped to the owners of the IP tokens, to the stream tokens for right now, specifically. And notice I did say IP tokens, and I said specifically streaming right now, because again, this is just the first step, and there's so many other types of IP directly related to music that the tech stack works. Our fractionalization and the distribution method that works for all the different types of IP. The crux of the matter for the other types of IP is legal precedents and legal contracts that are associated with the minting and the distribution or the processing of that. It takes money and it takes time, right? So I'm just talking streaming right now because that's the easiest thing for us to do at the current junction of where we're at. So, but that's how the payout works. So we take a snapshot, and then when the snapshot's taken, that maps where the streaming tokens are, which represent the royalty distribution. And so at that point, on the interface from our end, basically we're going to do a claim. So you can look at your account balance and go, hey, do I want to claim my royalties right now? Right. So as opposed to doing an airdrop, which is not cost efficient. Right. So that's the choice we made going into this for this right now.
There's a couple of interesting things there that I'd probably like to point out. One is that the IP rights just for streaming are different to something like streaming video music and other like radio as well. So it's all different payment channels that you guys have to tackle. So it's a lengthy process.
Yes, it is. And it takes different entities to tackle certain other things. So like you mentioned, audio with video, that's essentially sync licensing. And you mentioned earlier about somebody putting up a video on chain. And Vic, so if something is distributed just on chain and it doesn't leave the chain and it doesn't, I guess we can call that, you know, if there's no IRL component to it and it only lives on chain, the tech stack to map things like that, that's kind of already there. It's not very hard to do. But as soon as you want to go out into the rest of the world off chain, all of a sudden, there's already systems in place and they're not really incentivized to change anything. So you have to be really strategic on how you basically make yourself important to them is what it amounts to, right? So that's part of the equation. And so if I were to tell somebody, okay, what is Noom doing right now at this very moment in time? Well, the first product we're actually releasing in the summer is a distribution service that combines fractionalization and tokenization of the ownership with distribution to the regular, quote, off-chain in real life consuming models, essentially all the streaming services. And that in and of itself, to my knowledge, even on other types of either other chains or anything like that, to my knowledge, we are the first that actually will be competing with traditional like businesses. We're going to be competing with the DistroKids, the CD Babies of the world, with arguably a better value prop and a competitive price model for artists to actually use this as a distribution service. So forget the entire crypto component of this. People are going to be able to look at us and go, hey, I can use them as a distribution service instead of CD Baby or DistroKid, and I get to keep 100% of my ownership, right, as opposed to you giving 5% away to those distribution services. And I happen to like the price point better than theirs. Also, it's a one-time payment, and then it stays distributed forever. It doesn't get pulled down if I don't pay another subscription in the next year, right? So that's the first product we're actually releasing that's going to be automated on the back end that any musician can use without having to talk to any of us about this. And actually, this past week, we actually did our first fully automated transaction without any GUI, but all the code on the back end for distribution purposes via all of our white label solution with that. So it was really, really exciting in the dev channel. So there was lots of command line pictures being sent around. So fun times. So that's actually the first thing that we're turning on for everybody to use, which, man, I'm super excited because I'll actually get to use my own product. So that to me is going to be kind of an aha moment, not necessarily from a consumer standpoint just yet, but from a musician standpoint of going, hey, I can distribute my music and I get the benefit of it's all tokenized. So I can represent my ownership in tokenized fashion, which then allows me to essentially sell that ownership, right? So that's the next component would be the marketplace to actually buy and sell those streaming royalties is what that actually amounts to. And so that's going to be coming around rather quickly after the launch of the distribution service. And our rationale behind that was actually very strategic. And the point was, is that before you turn on a marketplace, you need to have metrics and data, right? And so it will be helpful, I would think, that we would want that distribution service to have been used for a little bit of time so we can actually start generating usable metrics to actually, whenever something is posted on the marketplace for sale, you can see the performance metrics of that song over the course of however many, you know, weeks or months that it's out. And that can help you inform your decision if you think it's a good, if that's something that you want to purchase, right? So that was the rationale behind doing a tiered rollout and not just all at once, because that's, for us, it makes more sense from a developer standpoint and a product release, because we realize that we have a tech team, we have this whole team, but when we turn on this product, all of a sudden, we're going to have an added arm of, quote, support for people just using that particular product. And so that's going to take bandwidth. And so we have to be strategic with, you know, how we utilize our resources. So, but that is actually what's coming up in the summertime.
Big, big summer for you guys. Definitely a big summer. I have been jumping around other chains and investigating what generally what their ecosystems are like. Like my night job, not my day job, is working with a cross-chain DEX, BlueShift, and you know we're launching over on Algorand, Polygon, and as part of that process, I do a lot of research. And I have not seen anything else that is tackling the music distribution side of things. There's other projects, plenty of other projects that are trying to copy Spotify. Doing a decentralized like music player and stuff like that, but nothing that goes deep into the actual infrastructure part of the music industry. So I really do think Noom is a a very, very unique product. And I think a lot of music artists, once they understand it and visually see it, are going to be quite excited. And I was just laughing a little bit before because, like, you know, screenshots of console commands and command line prompt responses is, you know, for some people, I got no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I have to say my IQ, my ego takes a hit and my IQ like goes up a point or two every time I open the dev channel, as one of the basically amounts to, because I'm like, I'm a musician, I count to four on a daily basis, and if anybody thinks I have to count any higher, I do not. Even in 6/8, I feel it in two or in three. So yeah, that's you're not wrong. I will say, you know, everything that we just spoke about was artist focused, and we haven't talked about consumer focus, because in my mind, consumer focus is different from the artist side. Those are two separate target groups, and they both have two separate products, essentially, is what it amounts to, right? So, you know, I did an interview earlier today with another YouTube channel this morning, and it was fun. I think he's from Croatia, and or he's currently in Croatia. I'm not quite sure. I can't remember. But point is, he asked me, he said, what does success look like in 2 years' time? And I held up my iPhone, and I showed the app icon for Doom. And I said, I want everybody to have this icon. I want them to have this app on their phone in 2 years' time. And that's what success looks like for us. And from a consumer standpoint, you know, you mentioned everybody trying to do Spotify, and I think they're doing it backwards. You have to have infrastructure in place first before you have frosting. Like, you have to have the cake before you add the frosting. Otherwise, it's just weird, I guess. Unless you're that person, we can have a whole nother Cardano debate. Do we want icing upside down on the cake, or do we want it on top?
But you ask my daughter, should we want the icing first?
That's like pineapple on pizza. What's wrong with you people? But, you know, that's the thing. So distribution service first. Marketplace to trade those specific streaming royalties, which is different from the record store, right? That is a separate product. The record store is focused on serialized and collectibles, which is a different product than the royalty side, right? Now, that doesn't mean that in the future they might, you know, absorb each other in one place, but they, as it currently stands as of right now, they're two separate entities. They're not entities, but two separate locations and two separate products. After we have those two things, we already have iOS and Android developers. We have those people on our team. And to point out the iOS app on my actual iPhone right now, that was just as an FYI, anybody that was wondering what Juice was making a face for in the picture at Rare Bloom last year, it was that. He was looking. I had Andrew's phone in my hand, showing him a click-through thing on the app. But that is the next focus point. After that is turning on our own streaming service, and in my humble opinion, that is going to really, really change and help people grasp an understanding of, holy crap, there's a lot of value here. Because I hear and I say this, I always go, streaming royalties have the least perceived value. And I use the word perceived very purposefully, and that's because of two reasons. If you look at the contracts from distribution services, there's a dirty little secret. And as we've been working and building having our white label partner for the Web2 side of things, we've kind of been able to unravel this onion a couple layers at a time, and occasionally we come across a layer and we kind of go, what the heck? And we had one of those moments. And if you look at distribution services, they say, hey, we're giving you 100% of your streaming royalty income. But what if you go into the contract and actually read it, what it actually says is that we're giving you 100% of what we get. And that's a very different sentence. And so what does that mean in practice? It means that you get 100% of whatever the distribution service gives you. And that gives them wiggle room. You don't know how much you're getting. So you can be getting 100% of 40%. And there's another 60% on the back end that you never see. But you sign the contract, right? So there is a lot of value that never makes it And so we're going to actually, when we turn on our own streaming service, we will have direct to consumer from the artist to consumer and vice versa, to where it's going to be an order of magnitude more profitable for an artist to have their music consumed on our platform as opposed to the traditional Web 2 platforms. And so that doesn't mean that it won't still be on the traditional platforms, because you don't want to cut off people's access to your art. You want, as a musician, people to hear your music, right? Because otherwise, how will you be discovered, and how will you, you know, grow your community? But what we're going to, I firmly believe, what we'll see is that artists will go, holy crap, you know, one stream on Spotify from the country of USA gives me 0.003 cents per stream. Well, one stream on Noom gets me an order of magnitude larger per stream. And it's a very simple reason behind that. It's because our profit margins aren't designed to turn a massive profit. It's designed to keep the lights on and the infrastructure paid for to where it can continue to work. So there's a lot of value that's just going exactly where it needs to go at that point, and it's to the holders of those stream tokens. And so I think that's going to make people understand the actual value prop behind that type of royalty. And that hopefully at that point, we'll have educated them enough to understand the concept of tokenization of royalties, to where we can then offer more gamification and other types of royalties that can be tokenized.
I'm trying to visualize what the trading of these royalty tokens is going to look like. Would it work similarly to a DEX or something? Or like, what are we buying and trading the tokens against?
That's a great question. And so that's actually why, you know, some people might ask, well, why aren't you just partnering with a DEX to offer this? And it's because, what are you trading? You're trading fungible tokens, right? And we fractionalize ownership into 100 million parts. That's 100 million fungible tokens that you can be trading. That, by that calculation, you could be trading 0.000001% ownership over a piece of music. And that is not cost efficient, theoretically, from transactioning, right? From a transaction standpoint of the blockchain. So we have to create a new user experience and essentially that a new UI to represent token bundles and how we're actually going to be representing those on the store. And so that's caused us to actually have to create our own interface that's going to make it look the way it's supposed, that we need it to pass the grandma test of going, what did I just do? Did I just sell? How much did I just sell? All the things. So that's always in our head. Essentially, it's like, does this pass the grandma test? Can somebody look at this at a glance and go, what the heck did I just do? And so that's kind of where we're at with that. So that's why, you know, we are doing a lot of, well, we've already gotten into, I think, our second iteration of what the marketplace is going to look like. So just working with product and design. So the Figma is getting a hefty workout as of late. I will tell you that the design and product, it's already finalized for, obviously it better be, otherwise we couldn't be saying summertime, but it's already finalized for the actual artist portal, which is the distribution service. So all of their juices are going towards the interface and the marketplace of how that's going to look. So
cool. I'll bug you for screenshots and whatnot later.
Deal.
But we have a speaker come up. It's Kiwi Crypto. I always see you around. Good to have you on the stage here. Ask away.
Hey guys. No, I love talking to the game team. Sorry about background noise, guys. You're going down a very bumpy road right now. The fractionalized thing, I was kind of wondering how that works as well, but you've kind of semi-explained that now. I just want to clarify further. So that will be kind of like handling like any other main token, really, sort of like any other project token. But you guys will build your own like sales and stuff for that, like your own marketplace for that then.
That is correct.
And one thing I didn't realize is every song will have its own token. Is that right, Ryan?
So here's the kicker, and this is going to kind of make people's heads explode, I think, because again, I keep talking about streaming royalties tokens, and I've said this a couple times, but I want people to kind of think as a thought exercise, how is it going to manifest itself? Let's look down. So to answer your question, yes, every song will have its own set of tokens that represent ownership. Now, whether or not an artist chooses to put them up for sale or not is up to the artist. So that artist could distribute and you could have a piece of music out there and you're like, oh my gosh, I want to buy this. They use Noom. It's fractionalized so you can sell it, but it's not for sale because they chose not to. That very well could happen. But yes, every song will have its own bundle set for streaming royalties. But let's take it a step further. Let's go down the road in the rabbit hole of master rights, mechanicals, sync, neighbor, terrestrial, all of these other types of royalties that can be attached with or associated with a piece of audio. You can essentially say, and what you could think of is you can go, all right, I'm an artist. I have my piece of music. I want to distribute it. Great. I select distribution mint. So that generates that contract and that set of fungible tokens that represent or that are attached to that legal document. Well, let's say I want to offer master rights. I actually want to fractionalize my master rights. Well, that's a different legal contract, but the tech stack, to my earlier point, works. It's the same tech stack. You fractionalize that fund, that NFT, right? That non-fungible token that's at the top of the box that has that legal document and all the metadata, and then concatenated within that, you have the fungible tokens that represent the different types of ownership, the different types of royalties. And so you will eventually, in the marketplace, you can see, let's just pretend you make a song, Pete. We can call it, I don't know, like Kiwi Crypt. I don't know. We can go Pete and Kiwi. We'll call it that. I don't care. Or we can say, actually, we can create a song that's No Pineapple Pizza. And let's say that you want to offer master rights and put some of those up for sale. And you also, it's on streaming platforms, it's on Noom. So you want to offer some of those royalties for sale as well. So if I click on your song, I'll see a different list of types of royalties that song has, and I can buy types of different royalties based off of my preference. Let's take it a step further. Let's say, because the master rights are the most valuable rights, theoretically. Mechanical are a close second, sometimes even more than the master rights, because if it's just a really, really popular song that has a lot of people making versions of it, then they can arguably, the mechanicals can end up being more valuable than a particular master recording. But let's say, for argument's sake, I want to put up my master, part of my master rights. Well, if you have part of the master rights, that helps, that actually gives you some control over where that audio lives. And so if I'm an artist and I go, hey, I want to give up 5% of my master rights, but in order for somebody to even have the opportunity to buy part of the masters, they have to have skin in the game on other types of royalties associated with this piece of audio. So let's pretend now that we have a world of token gated access to different layers and levels of IP. And so if you want access to the master royalties, then you have to have some skin in the game with, say, the streaming royalties. And that can go all the way down a rabbit hole of how much token gating access do you want? Do you want to allow early access to your streaming royalty income sale, or your streaming tokens or your master tokens to people who have already purchased a prior single? The flexibility of that goes on and on and on. And so now you're adding this level of gamification to ownership, which, again, I will say vehemently, is much more involved and a step above just being a fan and consuming or purchasing a serialized release. That is a step above. And I know that with right now, people are going, okay, we've had like 6 artists that did some stream token sales. Okay, great. When do I get my royalties? When I get income? That's a very short-sighted, basically just a mindset of you've got to look past, because again, like the 6 that we've done, it's not it's not to to make people rich. And I know we were in a bear market thing, and people are like, when does it go to moon? But what it is to establish the precedence and the tech stack that it works, and that it's replicable, and that it's, you can reproduce this, and it's scalable. And that's an important part of this, because again, we have two sides of an equation. We have an artist side that has their own product with distribution and eventually distribution of other types of royalties. And then we have a consumer side for regular masses to consume your art, and then to go a step further from just a regular fan of purchasing a CD or an album or maybe merch to wanting to be co-owners or be partial owners with you and want to grow and come along that journey with you as an artist and want to be invested in you for years to come and not just for a quick flip. You know what I mean? So that to me is going to be a big, not a paradigm shift, but I think it is going to be thank God crypto finally has a little bit more of traditional investment thesis behind it than just what's the next PFP I can flip. If I haven't done 100x or like at least a 10x in 2 days, I'm doing it wrong. You know, like I want to go find the next Billy Joel because I'm going to see him this week. I'm super happy about that. But I want to find the next Billy Joel or the next Vienna Waits for You single before it becomes this just ridiculously popular thing. And that might take years for an artist to be truly discovered. And there's been a lot of artists who, you know, arguably they were more valuable after they died than while they were alive. And, you know, and I think that's going to be a big part of the equation where you see these traditional people that aren't willing to pay ridiculous amounts of money for an album, but might want to pay $100 for partial ownership. Right. And so I think that's, you're going to see a paradigm shift of risk appetite and then also investment thesis and what that actually looks like, as opposed to just degens, which, hey, we love degens. We need you. I might have degened into other projects myself before. It's okay. It's what we do.
Did you buy SnapGo?
Oh, I most certainly did.
I did not.
I did. I can't tell a lie. No, I definitely bought Snack, and I sold half of it and recouped my initial investment. And I just am. It's a very modest amount. I have like a million Snack just chilling in my wallet, and I'll probably look back at it in 6 months and go, man, I should have sold that when I could have made $100.
All right. It's not investment. It's a speculation. It's none of this is investment advice.
Just not financial advice. Yes.
Yep. Kiwi, you've got your hand up. You've got a question there.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Maestro is going right down the rabbit hole with this idea. Wow. Look, so the way that plays out in my head, you've essentially gamified the even the master rights to the point where people will pretty much want to get involved with trying to market it out to get other people to use the master and, you know, pretty much put it in different places, have the ability to put it on radio, have the ability to, you know, create CDs in different countries and things like that. Because they'll get the royalties coming back to them from the master rights. Is that the way it plays out?
Yes, you've created a double positive feedback loop. Is essentially what this does. And essentially, like right now, we have music it's on, you know, it's on streaming platforms. I have a playlist that's Noom playlist. It's everything that we've distributed up to this point. And I just listen to it. And every time I listen to it, I go, hey, I just paid myself. Yeah, it might be small right now, and that's totally fine. But the fact that I can pay myself while I'm listening, that is a big deal. And so, you know, but yes, to your point, essentially what we're doing is we're providing extreme, in my opinion, it's extreme liquidity to this. It's, in my opinion, it's a brand new asset class. That's kind of how I view this.
Human liquidity.
I mean, it is. And it's truly, and people, you know, some people go and they'll ask the question, go, well, this sounds like a security. And I have two things to say about that. One, a security has to be issued between two. It's a business B2B. It's not a P2P. That is a very distinct thing. And also the product that you're buying and you, it's not that you expect it to go up in value, and it's not based off of the efforts of others because it's already been created. That's the first thing. And two, that, you know, and that's a very, honestly, that's a very distinctly big deal to mention. And two, it's the product's already out. You can, all you do is consume. And so, you know, from a legal standpoint, and like Michael Cassidan, who's one of our legal advisors, he's an IP rights lawyer, and he's in, I think he's in Jersey. He's somewhere over there. Anyways, we always, I love, he and I had a legal noon night, I don't know, I think in the summer, we were talking about this very thing, and he was like, yep. He's like, I don't disagree. He said, this is going to be fun watching it actually play out in court. And I said, I'm with you on that. It will be, you know, but I think, you know, this is already happening. That's the thing. Like, the tech is moving faster than the law. And I think we're seeing that, and not just this area of crypto, but I think crypto in general. And I think, you know, nobody here doesn't acknowledge that. And, you know, it's, I don't think personally, and again, you know, we built a business on this and I firmly believe this, but this is here to stay. In my humble opinion, this is here to stay, and it's going to become a thing. The industry, and I say the industry as in the music industry, it moves very slowly. It takes a very long time to pivot. But when they do decide to pivot, they move fast. And you can see this from the CD, from the transition from CDs to streaming in the early 2000s. They had no incentive to even care, because they were like, what we do makes us money and we're big, so it makes us a lot of money. We don't have an incentive to go be creative with something, because we're not going to, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right. And essentially, it ain't broke for them, so they're not going to fix it. But when they finally realized that, oh crap, we had our LimeWire moment, and then Spotify / all the other streaming services kind of figured out a way to bring music to the masses. That was their shtick, even though we can talk about what that looks like. They went, oh crap. Okay, the genie's out of the bottle. We've gone as long as we can with physical CD sales. All right, time to pivot. And then they pivoted very quickly, because they have friends in high places of legal. And so what did Spotify do? They went, please don't squish us here. Have 15 to 20% ownership of Spotify, the corporation, right? And so when they pivoted, it went fast. I think we're going to see a very similar thing in this particular area where we're moving, to where right now you see some of them playing around with like just NFT collectibles, and that's as far as they'll take it. And what they're doing is they're taking their traditional Web2 product that they might sell X amount of units of every year, and they're utilizing and capitalizing on the pretty bow that is, quote, Web3 and NFT, the name NFT, to increase the sale of the very same product with just a nice different wrapper on it, right? So they're doing the very same thing. They are using the same business model as long as they can, because it works, until they're going to have to pivot. So, you know, that's kind of, I think, where we're at. I think we're a couple years off from that, because they can still make money on it. I think by 2025, I think things will be much more firmed up, just in my opinion. We're early, and that's a good thing, truly.
Yeah, I think you've got a very valuable model going there. So, you know, I'll say it's a great beginning for where Web3 could go with this. I don't know where you'll go down the path with this, but it'll be wonderful to see it play out for not just the legal side of things, but everything, like how the actual platform goes, because you're giving somewhere for people to actually put their stuff to be found. And I think that's what we're missing in Web3 at the moment, is a platform that actually gives people a place to go and search for music they might like, because at the moment, that's not really an option. They're different chains, different things, different that, different the other. The platforms are very broken and not really, don't complement each other. So hopefully you can do something with that. And Pete, sorry, I didn't say hi back before. I should have said good morning or good afternoon or good evening, good night, whatever.
Oh, good, Kiwi, all good. Ryan, I don't think I've ever asked you this before, but in terms of going cross-chain, interoperable, are there any plans for that? Because there's always, you know, a resistance of using a Cardano native wallet, especially when you reach out to other ecosystems and they're trying to connect to your site or whatever, and they're saying their MetaMask wallet isn't working or their Wallet Connect wallet isn't working. And then they have to set up a whole new wallet. Is there any plans for that in the future? I know it's probably a year out before you even look at that, considering you're just launching this mid-year, not summer. It's winter on my side of the world, but this mid-year.
Oh, I totally forget, you crazy people in the Southern Hemisphere. When it's summertime over here, it's cold where you're at. I can't call it summer. Well,
I'm going to the jumper on now, so it's getting cold.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, no, to answer your question, so cross-chain, if you look at so this is kind of an intermediate level, I mean, intermediate step, but like the record store with our partnership with Sixity and with InMaker, Patrick, you know, their InMaker Pay solution allows for payment with other tokens. So from that standpoint, how I would love to view that as a funnel, personally, I would love to view an artist on the record store as a kind of a funnel for somebody that's not in Cardano to find them. They're like, hey, I like this artist. Okay, great. Oh, I can use my ETH, to purchase this thing. I don't have to, you know, or my BNB, whatever. I can use this to purchase it and I don't have to go and buy something else so I can go and buy it. You know, but next step is, oh, wait, I can own part of this. Oh, okay, but I need to get this so I can get over there and do this. And to me, that would be a funnel. But yes, to answer your question, to go cross-chain on this, that definitely has to be down the road because everything has to be fleshed out on the Cardano side. And to be honest with you, at that point, if you really think about it, I would, and this is me completely speculating, and there is nothing to take as gospel in this, but you know, having wrapped assets on Cardano or even via sidechains, that's going to be happening here. Just like you've seen with Mocomoda, it's already a thing, and I think we're going to see more of that in particular as people start using, like when we have more people come into these other chains and even the layer twos on ETH, you know, you have your Arbitrums, you have your Polygons, you know, let's be real, it's still expensive, and it's still going to cause consternation, even though they're, quote, scaling solutions. So I think you're going to see a lot of people utilize, I would say, Cardano, especially if they're smart business-wise. And I'll say this, having deterministic fees on Cardano is a big freaking deal. You can't run an effective, you know this, Pete, but you can't run a business unless you know your cost. That's just silly, right? And so from that standpoint, I think any artist or musician or any person that wants to do business, whether it be music or not, on Web3, they're going to want to go where they can, one, know their cost basis, and two, hopefully find a cost basis that they find much more palatable than where you can find on other chains. Yes, there are other chains that have low fees, and to say that there's not would be disingenuous. So I'm not saying that, but I will say native assets coupled with a relatively low fee structure have a lot of value prop. And native assets, and when we talk to other blockchains, which we do, I mean, when we went to Vegas, not Vegas, when we went to Los Angeles to the Draper Horowitz thing there, Blockchain LA, we spoke to people, and let me tell you, nobody was building on ETH. They were either building on Polygon or Near Protocol or whatever. It wasn't ETH. It was either layer twos or other blockchains that were choosing to sacrifice decentralization or security for high throughput. And they had ridiculously large requirements for actually operating nodes. So it was very federated, which, you know, it is what it is. But the point is that, you know, native assets, nobody else has that. And that's for us, that's a big deal for passing the grandma test, because the last thing you need is for grandma to click on something. Oh my God, I have this token that's popped up in my wallet that somebody airdropped me. Let me click on it and click something that ends up draining their wallet, which you can do that with an ERC, you know, 721, because a smart contract on ETH is literally code running, right? So it can be malicious. You can be Trojan horsed. That's a big thing.
It's a fun space.
Yes, it's full of landmines. Sorry, I went on a diatribe there. I apologize.
No, good, all good. But yeah, it's good to understand your views and opinions of how all that's going to turn out, especially around the project too. So yeah, it's good to know.
Well, I think anybody can go to our GitHub. Everything we have an ethos of everything we do is open source, right? Just to remind everybody. So all of our stuff is open source. You can go to the GitHub. It's open for you. I will say that we do have a governing principle that, you know, decentralization for decentralization's sake is not, in my opinion, the smart move. You need to have a good user experience. And so eventually we want everything to be fully decentralized. However, if portions of the platform are not up to snuff in a decentralized manner, we're going to use a centralized alternative. Prime example being storage, right? We were in talks with Storj, S-T-O-R-J. I think it was formerly Tardigrade. And to use for actually storing, so right, whenever people start using this, to actually store all the audio, all of the graphics, all the things, right, that requires a lot of storage. And we were going to look into using them for that decentralized storage solution. Well, they were down. They went down for like 4 days. And while that might seem minuscule, but on a scale of consumer, that means for 4 days you have artists not making money. You have people not listening to the music, not consuming your stuff. That gets real hairy real quick, right? So, you know, that needs to be something that gets fleshed out. So, you know, in the future, you could see people hosting decentralized storage nodes for Noom. And then also, we've already talked about this too, but for transaction processing, either a Noom sidechain, right, or Hydra Heads. I know Andrew's still working out his choice of what he would like to do on that. But think about processing transactions and batching things and whatnot, because on the marketplace, it's going to be high volume, either tipping or micropayments or trading and selling of those royalties. That's going to be a lot of volume, and it's going to be baked into the app. And so that's going to be it's going to be consumer grade, and it's going to require a lot of throughput, right? And so being a node hoster, right, that being like, think of it like a Sunday swap batcher, essentially, right? A scooper, maybe not exactly like that model, but those are big things that are going to need to be, that are on the roadmap that we already thought about, that aren't the sexy upfront for a consumer kind of thing to focus on, but from an infrastructure standpoint, and from an like a node operator standpoint, that's an interesting value prop, right? To be either somebody processing transactions on a sidechain, or somebody hosting the storage, right? So there's a lot to this entire thing that's both consumer facing, artist facing, and infrastructure facing that we're very cognizant of. And to Kiwi's point, I love to see a world where I will be able to utilize my streaming tokens or my master tokens or my mechanical tokens, whatever, as collateral in DeFi applications. Because at that point you will have assets that have metrics for generating actual value income as opposed to just what they're trading for on a marketplace. To me, that's a very distinctly different type of asset. So just an NFT PFP that its entire value is derived from what people are willing to pay for it, as opposed to an NFT or FT that's value, at least a minimum floor for that value, is derived based off of the income that is coming in because of that token marker in and of itself. And that's a very big, big paradigm shift and difference that I personally don't think anybody else has really put two and two together to realize those are very different. While they're fungible tokens and they're native assets, there's a difference in holding one of those in your wallet than just holding a regular PFP.
Huge, Ryan. Absolutely huge. Now it's coming up to the hour for me, and I've got a limited amount of time here, but I'll invite anyone that has questions that wants to come up and ask Ryan about Project Noom and everything about it as well. We've gone through quite a bit and covered a lot of the topics and everything that's upcoming. So I'm pretty excited about the upcoming few months for the project in general. But if anyone has a question, please feel free to come up on stage and ask away.
Kiwi, what you got?
Yeah, look, and I hope you guys can hear me. The background noise is pretty shocking in these trucks. Sorry. Couple of things I wanted to mention for you guys that might actually come in handy in the future. Two very important pieces of tech coming up, and I think they will service the needs of people who are looking for this sort of infrastructure very, very shortly. I actually need to speak to one of these companies about the other one because I think they can use it. Firstly, the decentralized storage you were talking about, the new service Iagon up and coming. They're looking to do basically what you were talking about, people running the storage as decentralized, you know, paid service network. They act as a platform for purchasing the needs of the stuff like that. The information gets stored out to the public, like so. Decentralized, encrypted, very, very broken up, and yeah, it's highly technical. I won't go into it, but Iagon, you want to have a look into that if you're looking at decentralized storage. The other one, and I think I need to speak to Iagon about maybe using this, Hypercycle. Now, they are the beginning of something new. I expect to see lots more of this come up in the future. But Hypercycle are a super low cost, high speed, super efficient means of transferring data between point to point, peer to peer, at incredible cost efficiency. Now, the token itself actually has a 64 kilobit data slot in it, and that is the means of payment, as well as the moving of the data is like in the token. So you can imagine it gets very low cost, very fast. Obviously, if the token price goes up, the data price goes up a little, but I mean, not substantially enough, I would think, to affect their network the way that they've planned it out. Now, that means the way they're doing this, you don't even need TCP/IP to actually communicate. They have built their own base tech called TOTA/IP that is pure peer-to-peer networking. As long as you've got internet, a node can communicate with another node running the same setup. So even if the major internet connections get all jammed up, it doesn't need it. It can find its own path. It's quite amazing stuff. So this is the sort of tech we're going down that will mean that your decentralized setups for something like this music streaming should become incredibly efficient over time.
No doubt. And if anybody doesn't know about Hypercycle, Ben with AGIX, I know that they're partnering with them to help facilitate some stuff as well. So yes, and we definitely know about Iagon as well. So you're spot on with that. I see some people down there. I see Space Lady. Hello, Nudes. Hello, and then Grape Ape. It's good to see you in the Gold Rush as well. If anybody has any other questions or you want to ask, feel free to hop up here. I'll say just as a quick recap for anybody that's just listening in, the summertime, this summer, distribution service, which we're calling the Artist Portal, but it is literally distribution service, is going live. Fully automated for artists to use. And then following that, we're going to have the marketplace for the streaming tokens. That's going to go live. And then after that point, we're going to be shifting our focus over to consumer grade as far as mobile application and streaming service for ourselves to actually provide. So a Web3-based streaming service that's going to be mobile. But that is what is immediate thing going on, and we'll actually have an update, I do believe, to our white paper. We'll have a white paper V2 with some updated, here's what we've done at this point, here's where we're moving now, here's our trajectory based off of how much we've gotten done at this point, all those things, that'll be coming out here soon as well. Just keep everybody updated on things. So that's a quick recap overview of what's going on at this very moment in time. So, and Pete, I will say, it's not alpha, but it is kind of like just forward thinking. PROs, when I'm mentioning sync rights, mechanicals and neighboring and all those things, if you're in the real world, those require a PRO. We are very well aware of that. And I'm very interested to see what the next quarter is gonna produce. I think it's going to be fun times. So, yeah.
Absolutely amazing, Ryan. I do have to hop off at this point, so you're going to lose your wingman here. But thank you, everyone, for joining in and listening in as well. Of course, Ryan's running the space, so you can keep it going. So if anyone has questions or if Ryan wants to talk about all the actual music artists that have released lately as well, that's a pretty cool thing to highlight. There have been quite a few artists in the Cardano space launching their stuff through the platform too. So it's really good to see, and really good to see the community support their work as well. So that's been absolutely amazing.
Pete, thank you for hosting or co-hosting with me. It's great to have you. And yeah, you're spot on about that. So be safe and enjoy the rest of your day. Have you already had your boxing for the day?
No, that's later tonight. Later tonight. Got a two-hour session.
Priorities. All right. I got you. I expect a video posted soon, please.
Awesome. I will do.
All right. Thanks, Pete. Appreciate you.
I will.
All right, everybody. I think we've been going for an hour. If we have any other person who wants to hop up, ask any questions, I see the Gold Rush has done that. I will let you come on up. Let me see here. All right. Let me get you up here. All right. I think he's coming up. Oh, I'm inviting you to speak. I'll get you up here and let you ask your question. If anybody else has any questions, you want to hop up, now is the time. Otherwise, I'm going to let us all go this evening, but more than happy to answer questions. Where did he go? Gold Rush, I sent you an invite. Maybe you didn't mean to do that. Kiwi, you got any other questions before we hop off?
No, not at the moment. I think... probably a quick rundown of any of the new artists you've got coming on board at the moment. That'd be, you know, really good just to know if you've got anyone that interests us.
Okay, just gave Nudes an update. Okay, so yeah, if anybody is wanting to actually do a serialized release at this current moment in time, recordstore.noom.io is the place to go. What will happen at that point, there's actually, we have a place for you to apply for a drop on there. And so when you get there, it'll take you through a TypeScript, and that gets your information sent out. And then Jimmy, and our artist relations team Jimmy from Six City will reach out, and get all of the information and whatnot and get your, and talk with you about your mint. We're doing the record store is a little bit of a different beast than the thing I'm talking about for the summertime, but the record store is designed to be curated. And it's actually, for us, that record store is a very specific purpose. Because even though I think future is in, you know, we have the stream, the different types of IP tokens, and then the way that people are actually consuming the music is probably going to end up still being some type of a subscription base from a regular consumer standpoint, because the genie's out of the bottle, right? There's no reason to rehash LimeWire on blockchain, just personally, in my opinion. But the collectible genre, there's an appetite for it, right? And that's our biggest thing, is we just want to provide in as many different ways for artists to you know, put out their content. And if they want to do it in that manner as well, then, hey, we're like, well, heck, that's fine. We can do this. So that's part of the record store. So if you're an artist and you want to start getting music out strictly just on Web3 right now, in that serialized fashion, the record store is your place to go for right now. Gold Rush and then Nudes.
I was curious about incentivizing curation, because you had brought up curation. Can you throw me an emoji? You can hear me? Okay, great. So like on the record store or somewhere like that, or I realized that buying stream tokens, it kind of, you know, once I'm an owner of some kind of streaming rights, I realized that it behooves me to like create playlists with that. And, you know, because I'm trying to increase listenership to the IP that I partially own or whatever. Right. But it's in terms of the record store, if I were to create like a curated NFT playlist, you know, something that like, I think these artists, these songs, these tracks really do sound good And, you know, so, and then like I'm thumbs upping them in a way, but I'm adding them to my collection or something like that. Is there a way to incentivize that?
So from the record store, no, not to my knowledge, but I will tell you that for streaming services, yes. So, cause that's even already being done, curated playlist and people, you know, there's a way to add a social component to that, of, you know, if somebody wants to tip you for your suggested playlist, right? Cause they really, really like it and they, all the things, you can gamify that. So yes. In our own streaming service platform, yes, there's a way to incentivize playlist curation. Not in the record store, though, to my knowledge at this point. Now, there could be another way to do that, but not based off of my knowledge of how the tech works. There's no way to actually have a curated NFT bundle that you can somehow financially be incentivized to create.
I was kind of thinking like, if I created an independent movie and all of the tracks that I use in my movie are actual IP that is on your platform, so I could like use specific songs as the soundtrack that are already on the blockchain, you know what I mean, that are already being compensated that way, and da da da. I was just curious how that would all work. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, so part of that gets into legal. So basically, if you're going to use it, then you're owing the artist sync rights is what that basically amounts to. And so based off of the record store and what's actually being sold in the record store, it's only serialized. So you're actually, so that gets into the products being released in the record store do not satisfy the legal requirement to actually pay to the owners of that art or of that music to be used in like a film. Just using that specific example, if that makes any sense. So you would have to literally, at the current standard, like if some of these were actually distributed and they actually had their like sync rights available that you could purchase, then that would be one thing and then you could map that. But as of right now, just based off of an NFT, those NFTs are not of that. They're literally just a serialized release. I know that went way down the rabbit hole. Nope. Nudes? Gold Rush, you there?
I'm here, definitely. I don't know if Gold Rush wanted to follow up or if...
Man, I'm so sorry, Ben. I keep forgetting these headphones have a... So I actually unmiked and I was talking and I forgot that you guys can't hear me. Yeah, I was going to say, that's cool. I think my question was off base, actually. Curation, I think, should be incentivized on all forms of... I like what you're doing, man.
No, I appreciate it. No, I'm totally with you that curation definitely should be incentivized because, you know, like creating a, I've always actually said this because like part of what I do as a conductor is I create a concert, right? So like I am taking works of music that I didn't create, but I'm putting them in an order and in such a way that I think that it's evoking and actually conveying some type of greater message, right? So I'm trying to create an experience for a listener to consume these types of like these specific pieces in this order for a very specific reason. And to me, having playlist curation actually is very similar because it does the same thing. Like I have a very good friend who created a playlist just for me. It was it's like very much the equivalent of I burned you a mixtape, right? It's one of those things, but it has value to it, I think, personally. So no, I'm with you on that. Nudes, what you got?
Hey, what's going on, Ryan? Awesome space. Glad I was able to hop in and cool to see Pete. As always, I have a million different questions I could ask. I was curious if I could ask maybe one or two things about the record store. which I really love a lot. And it's so great to see this type of content being curated for consumption and publication on the blockchain itself. I was curious to know just like if you could speak to any like UI UX sort of like plans or updates that you might have. Just because like when I'm from a consumer perspective, I see things are available and it just says like the amount of NFTs. And I was always caught off. I'm like, is that how many NFTs are available? But it's, you know, how many that have been minted. And maybe from like a marketplace perspective, it could be like a thing like 37 out of however many might be in a thing, or 37 have minted and it's on sale until like whenever the policy ID ends, right? So it gives like the consumer some like initiative, like, hey, you should buy this kind of thing, as opposed to, you know, just stating how many are there. It's just what one of various things that I've thought about with this amazing platform. And I guess maybe another question real quick, if I could, is there any opportunity for existing music collections that are out there in the community to get integrated into the record store? And an example would be the Cardania project. They have a music album. Their policy ID ends on July 4th of this year. So they got, you know, a few more weeks kind of thing. And it would be so awesome if they're, you know, also featured on the record store too. I don't know if you've thought about integrations like that, or if people really have to like, you're only doing projects that start from the record store kind of thing. So thanks for the space, man. And appreciate the feedback and perspective.
No. I'm totally with you on the UI UX for the record store. So Patrick, an InMaker, Patrick is facilitating this with the tech stack for the record store. And then Jimmy is utilizing the tools of InMaker and also working with Patrick to go, hey, we really should probably have this feature. We really need to have this so we can give this artist this experience, right? So it's an iterative process. And so just, you are not wrong. And it's just know that we have, I know that we have an ongoing kind of iterative meeting with them of going, hey, like even after week one of the record store, we had a meeting, InMaker, Jimmy, Noom, and we were like, okay, let's do a recap. Let's talk. Let's list out. Here are the things that we like. Here are the things that we think need improvement. And now let's prioritize these in order of most important to be changed immediately. And then these other later ones can be iterative a little bit later on down the road, because, you know, InMaker, we're not their only people that they're doing stuff with. So essentially they have cadences, right? So that is, to answer your question, yes, we give feedback, and there are certain things in the pipeline for changes that, yes, are going to be made. So that's the very short answer to that one. And then to your other question about like Cardania, the record store, if a project is minting something and it's being minted on another, not a DEX, but another minting service. So like if it's listed on JPEG store, if it's listed on a store, we actually aggregate those in our record store. So the record store will always have more actual music than any other place, because it has the stuff that we do with the record store itself, and then plus everything else that's already on other places, so like JPEG store, etc. So if Cardania is minting and they're live and you can purchase it on like JPEG store, it is searchable and you can find it on the record store as well. I hope that was your question.
Yeah, man, that's dope. I'm not sure exactly what approach they're doing. You know, Cardania has been doing stuff since like early 21. So I'm pretty sure that mint side is probably in-house for them. So I'm not sure the ability to integrate with that. But, you know, great to know for any other music producers or creators in the ecosystem that might be out there trying to get something, you know, hopefully up there. And if they didn't start with the record store, there's still a chance to join the shop. You know what I mean? I think it's really awesome, man.
No, spot on. Yeah. If you list, even if they do an in-house mint, if they list it on JPEG store or another store, a marketplace, it'll aggregate there. So that's, I think that's the important point is, you know, while we would like for them to mint with us, but if they can mint themselves and they like what they're doing, then that's totally fine. I would, you know, eventually it'll be to where it doesn't, just because you've, you know, you minted, maybe they want to just, you know, actually put it on the record store as opposed to JPEG store. I'll be honest with you. That was part of the rationale of us. One of the big reasons for us creating the record store is that, guys, I'll just be honest with you. There's so much junk on all of the marketplaces for NFTs and fungibles. We literally were like, and by we, I mean all three entities, were like, we need to have a place that people know that if they go here, it will only be music. They don't have to sift through any other things. If they want to find just music, they can come to here. And so that was kind of part of the impetus to that. So yeah, I'm with you on that. Grape Ape Records. How are you doing?
Ryan, doing well, man. How are you?
I am tired, but I'm blessed. I'm doing well, man. We're doing it. We're doing life.
That's great, man. Really excited. Thank you for taking the time. I don't want to basically throw too many difficult things your way or questions about PROs and things like that, because I come from the Web 2 world of the music business, and the PROs integrating into Web 3, what can you say to that as to where that's going? Because one of the things that I honestly get hung up on right now in terms of why I've been sort of sitting on my hands, so to speak, before I do any releases, is the integration into the Web 2 sort of PRO payment mechanisms and structures and lanes and all of those sorts of things. And I know that it's a really complicated thing, because those are just big behemoths that kind of like to do things their own way, I guess. I don't want to speak for them, but in my experience, it's been kind of that way. So I guess my question would be, how close are we, would you say, to that, those sorts of integration pieces coming into NFTs and being able to pay out in those sorts of ways in terms of the publishing pie? Because see, where I get hung up on, honestly, when I've talked to a lot of these other protocols, is basically I don't know if they like had been mentioned earlier, I don't know if the publishing side of things is truly understood or truly addressed in those ways. Because while I could go and release NFTs and do whatever drops that I needed, if that were to go viral on TikTok, I would not be paid for that, correct? Now, not that I would, but you never know. I have a friend that released song and it went viral and no one expected it. And there was hundreds of thousands of dollars at stake with the royalties. It was kind of a big deal. So I do want to make sure that I cover my bases in the future, but also I don't necessarily want to wait too long, because I think that it's exciting and I do want to be a part of this. And I hope that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense. And that is not, I like questions, and the fact that you understand that concept of the difficulties of the Web 2 and PROs, I hope that you'll appreciate the answer. So just for context for people, PROs are responsible for some things, some good, some not good. There are, at least for the United States, There's three big ones, and there's actually a fourth one that's kind of gaining a little traction, but there's ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. CSAC, you have to be invited to. BMI and ASCAP, you apply. You only get to pick one. Most of the time, a lot of like film score composers commercial music composers, so like Nashville is full of songwriters. It's what they call themselves, the songwriters, essentially. BMI is typically more, they typically go to BMI more. ASCAP is for like more classical or traditional like composers, and that are doing like, you know, they'll do like choral scores or full instrumental scores, etc. It's not a set in stone thing. That's just kind of a trend from at least where I'm sitting, that I'm saying. And so what this amounts to is that the PRO is designated, they're designed to go and track down all the times your piece of music's played in various formats or it's consumed in different mediums. And they're supposed to compile your money for you, and they charge you a fee for the privilege of tracking down your money and getting it to you. But side note, there's a lot of it is especially for in real life stuff. So like live performance, or if you're in a bar and somebody's playing your music in there off of something, they have to self-report and they have to report. Now there's a lot of human error and a lot of trust that's required to actually basically to do a full account of your monies. Now, what people don't know is that internally between the PROs, they actually have their own proprietary system that works really well. They're self-reporting internally. They actually have a system. And so to answer your question, that system needs an API connectivity to Web3 is what it needs. And we are aware of that, and we have connections with BMI. So just like how is Noom connecting to Web2? We have a white label solution that we have an API that we built or connected to with the white label solution. So we have a connective tissue that allows us to transfer value and data out of Web2 into Web3 and vice versa. And that's for the streaming side. What we need and are very cognitive of is we need a connective tissue between the PROs and Web3. And how we're planning on, how I think we have to approach it is the PROs are the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room. You don't mess with them because they will crush you. ASCAP has been around since 1915. Just think about that. And they have a war chest out of this world. And they arguably have more access to representatives than even a lot of CEOs, just because they have that much money. And so all that to say, you have to approach them from a B2B standpoint. And i.e., what does that look like? Hey, use our system and it'll save you 2-3% annually on your operating cost. And now people will go and they'll go, well, that's only 2-3%. But when you're dealing with a PRO where they're dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars, and arguably this entire industry is $1 trillion as of like last year's metrics with all the different royalties and reporting, it's over $1 trillion. That ends up saving them a lot of money. So at that point, they're utilizing that infrastructure, their internal stuff for reporting. But then when distribution happens and that happens, they go outside of their distribution center and then they go into Web3 that's automated. That's how I think we have to approach it as a B2B and how we can save them money. And then at that point, if you go down the road about 10 or 15 years, all of a sudden people go, well, I mean, yeah, I can register with the PRO, but why would I not just register with this Web3 thing and I don't have to wait 60 days for payouts at a bare minimum because I'm waiting for somebody to type something in Excel, right? So that's going to end up happening, I think. But anyways, great babe. I hope that kind of answered your question.
It does. I think that you mentioned the 1,000-pound gorilla, I guess, in the room. Yeah. So what's going to make the 1,000-pound gorilla play ball with you, I guess, because if saving money is one thing, like I understand that, but also protecting the old guard, I guess you could say, or the old way is a whole other thing. And I don't really know how future forward they might be thinking, let's say. I don't know. I could be wrong. I hope that they are thinking that way. But if we can't onboard things like ASCAP or CSAC or whatever, then what does that look like? If they are just wanting to, like, again, they've been around since like 1915. It's like they want to do things their own way and they've got certain powers that be, you know?
Yeah. So I'm not going to push back on that, but I will say, when you have a 1,000-pound gorilla and you go, hey, gorilla, would you like more bananas? they're not going to say no. I mean, I'm just to keep with the same analogy. I cannot stress enough how important and how much of a value prop to them. This is the thing. We don't have to. It's not us convincing them to use us. What it is saying, hey, you want to make more money? Yes, they want to make more money. I hate to say it, but it is like these, and this is a dirty, not secret, but it's just a dirty kind of, if you didn't know about it, here you go. Look, these entities they have government backing, and they're not going to go away. Let's just call a spade, and we have to be realistic, right? They're not going away. They might die 50 years down the road, but they'll be reincarnated and look different. That's what we see happen. But what I'm getting at is that the government supports them, and so you, as much as you want to fight that, let's be real too and go, hey, your government that supports this, and they're expecting these companies to do a service for the industry, that's not going to go away. What those services that are doing these things are, one of the three, they turned into a for-profit company just willy-nilly overnight. People don't even realize this. They were a non-profit. They're supposed to be a non-profit, and then literally overnight, one of them went, hey, we're going to be a for-profit. And the regulator let them do it, even though it was like a no sense and it's illegal, but they did it. Anyways, this is, look it up. I won't go into details here about that, but it's a real thing. That should let everybody know where they are with regulator and with regulation. And so to me, it's our job as the new guard or new industry, essentially, to be smarter than the old one. And so what I say by that and what I actually mean by that is it's the same thing with Spotify, with the labels. Look, the labels are no longer the power brokers. It's distributors who are the power brokers now, right? There was a shift, but the labels kind of got hoodwinked in the going, oh crap, we need to be on this because now everybody's willing to pay $9.99 and they just want to, now we know that we're going to make X amount because they're subscriptions, and that's much better business model than us not knowing if we're going to make our recoupable back on this artist that we signed. We don't know if we're going to do enough sales or ticket sales for touring or merch sales to make us back. Well, if we know we at least have this, then we can do that. Well, it's going to be the same way with PROs, especially whenever Dirty Secret, even though maybe two of them are nonprofits, at least one third of them are a for-profit company at this point. And so when you start telling that for-profit company that we can save you 2-3%, all of a sudden shareholders are going, why aren't you doing this? Right? Like there is a lot of power with that, actually. And I think they're going to have to not play with, but they're going to have to utilize the tech in order to satisfy shareholders going, you can save us this. Why aren't you doing this? Not to mention the fact that it opens up transparency for them in the sense of, if it's an automated payout and it's done in the tokenized fashion, that saves them operational costs too, from like cutting a 15-cent check that the stampage is more expensive than the money that's going to the artists themselves. And if you look at that, there's a big arbitrage with that. It's sad, but it's true.
So true, man. Dude, thank you for all of those thoughts. And I'll just add this one thing and then I'll hop off here because I'll let you do whatever. But like, I think that, yeah, that's a problem of like, I've gotten checks that have been big checks and I've gotten checks that have been for $1. Or I've also gotten checks for less than a dollar. And it's crazy because they spent more on the postage. Yeah, like you said, it's ridiculous. So it's like, I think that, so I don't know. I guess in the meantime, do we need to be just sort of like operating outside of that scope in that respect and waiting for them to come on board and then say, yeah, you know what, we're going to connect to the API. Let's say that two out of the three become for profit, and then that pressures the third or whatever. And then, like you said, the board members need to, they're going to come in and say, if you didn't do this, why didn't you do this? Like, I understand that. So I guess, you know, my last thought would be, do we need to sort of operate outside of this scope in the meantime for, like, I'm just saying, like, the next year or so, or until that kind of gets there. So thanks, man. Appreciate it.
No. Hey, I appreciate you. And from you know your business, you know what you're about. And so it's, yeah, I saw a picture of a professor of mine who's a composer. He got a check and it was like 12 cents. And it was the like obligatory post of, I don't do this for the money. I do it because I love what I do. And I was like, if that helps you sleep better at night and that's your mental gymnastics, then that's by all means, kudos to you. But I feel like what you do has more value than 12 cents. You know, but yes, I hear you on that. I think in the interim, you know, look, if you're a songwriter, right, or look, register with PR, pick a PRO, pick one, pick BMI, pick ASCAP, do that. That way you can still play in the regular, you know, like the regular traditional system. I think that if you want to forego PROs, then you have to live solely in Web3, and then at that point you have to be very realistic with your reach, personally. Because like I was saying earlier, you know, just like to Vic who dropped his film, you know, like that's great and it'll be wonderful, but you know that he did that as a labor of love and just wanting to distribute it on chain, right? So you know, I think still pick your PR, that way you have your connective tissues outside of the blockchain in and of itself. But just know that I think what you're going to actually see is a shift from it's the whole narrative of tokenize everything, right? This has nothing to do with music, what I'm talking about right now. This is a crypto just in general. And if like you remember, if everybody remembers, like back in 2019, there was this whole big push about tokenize everything. Like you're going to go to the gas station and buy a Coke with your house. Right. That whole narrative, I think even Charles in one of his early videos was talking about the concept of extreme liquidity. And so whereas, you know, where right now we have asset classes and, you know, you have your real estate portfolio, you have your other, you know, your stocks, you have your bonds, all that stuff, where eventually it's going to all just be, here's your net worth and here's your value. Right. And it's all kind of interchangeable. And I honestly think what we're going to end up seeing is that you'll one day stop getting a check in the mail and on your account, it'll end up having more things pop up and this will be as their infrastructure is being fleshed out. I think personally, I think it's going to kind of be a gradual thing for the PROs and just in general, but I can tell you, that is hot and heavy on my radar. And it's, you know, from my, like I had a meeting last week with another founder and their CTO about this very thing, because they're very passionate about in real life performances and in real life performance royalties. And we were just talking about BMI in general. And so what we were talking about with Neum, they were so intrigued and taken back by the tech stack for what we're doing with streaming and connecting Web 2 and Web 3. In that instance, we were talking about that same concept and that same tech stack connecting on PRO side of the equation as well. And we're going, yes, exactly. And, you know, API calls to their internal system. So yeah, I think that's where we're going. To answer your question, do you play around right now, just Web 3? I think it's your choice. I just think you need to have realistic expectations and understand the limitations of being solely on chain as an artist right now, because there are limitations. Outside being on chain versus or strictly on chain, or understanding what those limitations are, you know. So,
Ryan, appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for all that insight. And love what you're doing, man. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you too, man. Thank you so much for coming. All right, everybody. We've been going for an hour and a half. It's good to see you all. Thank you all for hopping in. And if anybody has any other questions, feel free to hop on up and request speaker. If not, I'm going to get ready to go to bed. Oh, what you got, Nudes?
Quick question. Real quick one. What's your favorite music of 2023 so far?
Oh, you're talking about like new music?
New music. Yes, sir.
Oh, man. I'm a Jacob Collier addict. So just go ahead, look up anything that Jacob has done. I forgot what is his last one that he just released this past quarter. I'll pull it up in a minute. I'll find it. I'll post it on Twitter. Yeah, no, I'm a Jacob Collier junkie. That's what I am.
Love it, dude. Awesome space. Thanks a lot for coming to hang. Thanks a lot for everybody for showing up. And always looking forward to everything that's cooking up in the new kitchen, my friend.
Appreciate you, Nudes. Oh, man, we have Big Joe the Don. Oh, Joe, I can't leave without saying hello to you. Uh-oh. All right, Joe. How are you? I was getting ready to go to sleep, and then the celebrity popped on.
Where's he at? There's a celebrity in here?
Yes, I never knew him.
Yo, what's going on? I came all late, huh? You guys are going to end it already? As soon as I get here, I see Nudes saying goodbye.
Oh, man, we've been going for an hour and a half. I was getting tired.
Those are rookie numbers. I did a space for 28 and a half hours one time.
I know you did. And I think, didn't you have leaf power going on?
Yeah, every which kind you could imagine. Edible, smoked, all kinds of stuff.
It's good to hear from you, Joe. How's life going? Is everything going well?
Everything's beautiful. Nudes sent me a bunch of noodles in the mail last week, and I've been enjoying those for a minute. And I'm just glad you guys are having a space and keeping the people updated, because I think music's going to be huge, you know what I mean? And I just want to give a shout-out to everyone in here that continues to support these projects that have been putting in work, because it means a lot to the projects, and it motivates them to keep putting in the work.
Joe, you're a poet. I'm not even going to lie. We appreciate you. And if anybody doesn't know, they host Stoner's Club most evenings, and they have a great intro song that I would love to mint. I'm just going to throw that out there. So I would love to distribute, because it's very catchy.
It's minting with Six City. There's only the remix version that's available. The original one, Policy's Close. And actually, I just looked at it during the space. You can go now to the record store. I believe the URL, recordstore.noom.io, and you can find the Cardano Stoners Club Anthem. It is a banger. It's such a good track. Love to see it highlighted there already.
Cardano Stoners Club. I'm telling you, man, it's so catchy. I almost want to remix it almost again. I'm gonna go buy that now, Joe. Look, this is the problem, okay? It's grown to so big that I don't know everything that's going on. I get updates from people. So this is life. I'm holding on for dear life. We're just getting our stuff done. Joe, do you have any parting words? I think it's actually poetic. We can have you. You have any parting words for the space?
I'll say it really poetic, right? I love all you guys, and I hope you guys all show each other love, because we need more of that shit these days.
I can't say it any better myself. If anybody has any questions, do not hesitate to DM me or reach out to anybody on the team. We are more than happy to answer any questions, or if you want to, you know, want us to walk you through anything, we can definitely do that. If you have not signed up for the email list for the beta testing for the distribution service, so the artist portal, you need to do that ASAP. That way, whenever it gets ready, when we turn that thing on for the rest of y'all, you can go and participate. So I'm actually really, really, I'm proud that we're about to turn this thing on. It's a big, long time coming, and it's a fundamental building block. So to me, this is, we've been already, the race was started like we started doing this down this journey 2 years ago, but I know for the, from a consumer standpoint on the front end, for you guys that have wanted ways to do Web3 and get your music out and all those things, I'm really, really, really excited. And I'm just really happy we're getting to this point. So it's been a long time coming. We got 40 plus people putting in blood, sweat, and tears behind this project. So, and this is just the beginning, and that's the most exciting part about it. So thank you all for your time, and thanks for the space. And again, shoot us DMs. Any questions you got, more than happy to answer them. Go check out the record store right now. That's recordstore.noom.io for any of the collectibles or the serialized releases. You can reach out to Six City. We have a submission form on that record store if you want to mint on there. And then sign up for the beta testing for the distribution service, that DSP service that's going live in the summertime. And fun things are coming. So thank you, thank you, thank you, everybody. And we'll hopefully touch base and have another one of these updates in the future rather soon.